Kia ora and welcome to this episode of Better Off Red. My name's Pip Adam and yes, thank you for listening. Very grateful for that and I hope you enjoy this episode. I've got a few instructions or information. This is a very informative introduction. So yes, I am probably going to be reading some of it. So my voice will go into reading mode at some stage. Anyway, so this week we are not speaking with someone who writes books or poetry. We are speaking to someone who makes visual art. We're speaking with Murray Hewitt, who works mostly in video. Now, because this is sort of, we're talking a little bit about visual arts, you may want to get some context to the conversation, and you can do that by going to our WordPress page, which is betterrednz.wordpress.com. So that's better, readnz.wordpress.com. So there I have links to Murray's video work, some of the works that we talk about. These are all linked to circuit.org.nz. Now, Circuit, you should just go there because it's just the most amazing website I think I've ever come across. It has amazing interviews. There's an amazing interview there at the moment where Mark Amory talks to the people that organised a telethon a couple of weeks ago. And yes, you should just have a look. It's just absolutely fantastic. So we have links to circuit.org.nz on our WordPress page, betterrednz.wordpress.com, so that you can get some context for some of the works that we talk about. However, if you're walking to work or on a bus, you can still enjoy this podcast. You can maybe go and look at the videos later. I don't know. I don't want to tell you how to consume your podcast, but it'll make sense. It'll make sense. Murray's a wonderful explainer, and it's really great talking to him. So just to, in Murray's words, Murray's video work in the past has contemplated consumer behaviour, remembered historic events, and mulled over current political ones through the considered actions of a lone costumed figure or repetitive stationary camera shots that encourage sustained deliberation from the viewer. Now, the reason that I was very keen to talk to Murray at the moment is that his work, The Rising Gale, has just been part of the Common Ground Festival, which was a festival produced by public art and urban revitalization organization Letting Space in partnership with the Hutt City Council. So the theme of the Common Ground Festival was groundwater, and it explored the relationship we have with water and especially the Hutt River, Te Awaka I Rangi. So just the idea that it took art and creativity and action sort of out into the water around Hutt Valley. So with that in mind, Murray's work, The Rising Gale, screened at 5 bore and river sites across the Hutt Valley from the 25th of February to the 4th of March. So shot by drone, The Rising Gale maps a path from the aquifer and Taita at Matthew Soames Island, and it flies over the water in real time. There's a fantastic making of Rising Gale as well, which I would really recommend. It's a great little piece of interesting, I don't know, film how-to. It's very good. So as you'll hear from the interview, Murray's work, The Rising Gale, played at all sorts of different places. So it played at the bore site where the film starts. It's played at the Gear Island water treatment plant, at the railway station, at a riverbank. And in each of these places, there was a soundtrack to it. The movie is silent, and Murray organised to have these soundtracks sort of enacted around them. So the event that you'll hear some excerpts during this interview from was an event that was held on the 26th of February at GNS Science. So what Murray did was he approached three writers, Jem Wilder, Damien Wilkins and Helen Heath, to come and read pieces that they wrote in response, but also sort of in contemplation of the work. So you will hear those. The first one you will hear is from Jem Wilder, and then Damien Wilkins is in the middle, and then Helen Heath finishes this podcast. These are very short excerpts. The pieces were obviously a lot longer, but I just thought it was nice to get a little bit of the voices of these writers in when we were talking about The Rising Gale. So yes, I hope you enjoy this conversation. Big thanks to Letting Space. Common Ground was an amazing event and just another incredible achievement for Sophie Jerram and Mark Amory and everyone else involved with Letting Space. And thank them heaps for letting us use the audio from that event and also the pictures that are on our WordPress site. So yes, thank you very much and I hope you enjoy this. Thanks.
My first memories of Te Awa Kairangi smell like rubbish. It'll be a weekend, any weekend. Dad's home and there are jobs to do. The lawns are mowed, the catcher on the mower emptied over and over onto an old stained drop cloth. Two-stroke and grass clippings stain his hands and invade our nostrils. The seats are folded up in the van and it is filled with the clippings and other garden waste, rubbish, broken toys, punctured tennis balls, furniture that is beyond repair, magazines, newspapers. We climb on top of the pile for the ride to the tip and then explore the mountains of other people's rubbish when we get there, tiny treasure hunters. Dad empties the van and we pile back in with whatever we've salvaged after he gives it the okay. And we drive down the hill, heading for the river. We fling all the doors and windows open, pile out again, make a beeline for the water. Water and children are magnetic forces. While Dad sweeps out the van and gives it a good airing, we paddle in the shallows, throwing stones, sometimes going in ourselves if the sun is out. Dad is one of those, if a job is worth doing, it's worth doing right kind of guys, and this is how you finish a trip to the tip. With a well-swept and aired car, leaving no sign of the load it's just carried. We never go to the tip without going to the river afterwards. The two places are indelibly linked in my memory.
Okay, so, hi Murray, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
That's really good. That was the first question.
All right.
Yeah,
I got that one correct.
That one correct, yeah, that's great. So I'm here with Murray Hewitt and we're at the Douse, so that's very nice. Thank you. First of all, I was going to ask you why film and why not another medium?
Yeah.
But then I thought also a question that even precedes that is why video and not film? Like, is there a difference in the way it looks or the way you make it or that sort of thing?
Yeah, I suppose it's funny because I think video is something that artists use because it's got a history. Mm. So people, there was film and then when video players, I think around the 60s, became available, then artists started making independent things, so, you know, so they get away from the big media and do whatever they want. So that sort of label has stuck. Mm. So obviously it's not a video now that we're doing, it's digital film. So there's that. As far as film goes, film is just far too expensive, obviously, nowadays. And it's, I suppose it sort of leads a little bit into the question of why I use a video, why I use a digital thing, is because I think it's more, people are used to it, you know, I was actually thinking about this and thinking that I often use sort of writing terms to explain it, like I think the grammar of screens and film and video is something that everybody understands, because we have to look at it. We're not everybody, you know, who is in the Western world that has a TV and video and computer and stuff. So that's one of the reasons that I like to use it. And like film, if I was using an actual film, then it becomes, it has a quality of film, which it brings with it a whole lot of other history or other sort of readings to it. So it's just going off the top of my head, but the film I just did of the river, I didn't really want it to be really filmic. I didn't want it to look like, the view is straight down, it's not slightly up so that you can see all the hills and the sea in the background, because that would for me start to be more of a commercial or a Lord of the Rings or a grand sort of thing, and I don't want it to be a big grand filmic thing. So I think that the digital format as well sort of has connotations of it not being, it's sort of maybe more everyday, something that we see all the time on a on our computer.
Yeah, because that's the rising gale, eh?
Mm.
Like, yeah, and it is. It sort of was shot with drones. That's correct, eh?
Yep.
And then is works through the river from Taita right to
To Matua.
Matua Sons. Yeah. Have you ever painted, or you've made music before and stuff like that? So, was that the visual medium immediately, or did you find your way toward it? Or
oh, I definitely did the sort of classic painting thing, you know, when I first thought about doing art. Because I came to making art, well, I returned to making art sort of in my 30s, early 30s. So so that's when I decided to go to art school, and you know, because out of school, just my cultural family background, artist wasn't a thing, you know. So I didn't do it. So I did engineering, which is just what I did do. And I mean, ended up doing being a drafts person, and that was in the 80s when we were still using our hands to draw pictures.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
And so CAD just came on after I got employed. So I got that job because it was a job that was sort of slightly arty because I was drawing. So, but it took me, 12 years to come back to sort of go, wait a minute, I've always wanted to do art. Let's just do it. And, and now I had a framework to do it with him. So when I went to art school, my portfolio sort of thing to get into art school was paintings, and a few sort of sculptural sort of maybe installation things. But whenever I'm making a video, it's always a painting reference for the frame. Yeah, so that because some of my other films where I've the performance ones where I go and do a particular action somewhere, I'm always wearing my black singlet, which is sort of Colin McCann has that as a sort of a motif in some of his paintings. That sort of, you know, man alone every day, New Zealand, whatever. And I suppose I wanted to, so I do want to, you know, connect back to some of those things and some of the things that he was on about, and some of the other works have Shane Cotton references and things like that. So in my mind, painting is a picture frame. That's just now moving. It's got sound. So I think I definitely have that in my mind when I'm looking at what the frame's going to be.
Because I was thinking, there's a couple of nighttime works of yours, particularly the ones that involve fire, and I think they look so beautiful the minute that you sort of are there, and there's something about the light in it, and you just, I don't know, there's something really special about those, and I like that idea of carrying over, like the conversation kind of continuing with the technology, you know what I mean? I really like that idea.
Definitely.
It's so wicked. So you did start, you are a civil engineer. And you've also done youth work, and you've done some other work, and I just wonder, what am I trying to say? Can you talk a little bit about what's similar, or what happens in your mind, because it's one mind with lots of different activities that it's done. What does a civil engineering noise sound like when you're making art, or what does the youth worker noise sound like when you're making art, or back and forward? I don't know.
Well, but it's interesting. The rising gale thing has a direct connection to my youth work, community work involvement, because so Letting Space, who sort of run the Common Ground Festival, they want to do community based artworks. So that idea, when I was at art school, it's called relational aesthetics. So so instead of it being paint being your medium, it's, you know, relationships being the medium. So when I did my masters, I sort of was a bit, I wasn't so cool with that. I was just thinking, well, you know, there's been some artists doing some work, and calling it art, but youth workers have been doing, you know, and community and aid workers have been doing that for freaking years. So you know, just stop wanking off about it. Okay, so, but having said that, there are things that the art world can do. Art world can approach it in a very different way, and possibly get funding, can get through a lot of red tape, and you know, a whole lot of that sort of thing. So, and I think that some of that work is fantastic, you know, but some of it is also slightly condescending, you know, and or ignorant of other things, you know, that happen. Yeah. So because I came straight out of being a youth worker into doing art, I didn't want to do what I was doing at youth work and call it art. But this project, they wanted a component of being involved with the community. So so I basically just combined those two things in the sense of, you know, getting a film that I could make that I'm familiar with doing, which obviously has a whole lot of connections with human beings and community and the process as well. Because a lot of art does do that. There's always, connecting with people and research that needs to be done. So I made the film, and then it was asking community groups to make the, you know, the sounds or various people to do that. So that was a nice kind of combo, because I felt like I'm really familiar with trying to honour the people who are contributing and sort of, and trying to keep that balance. Like, so the overarching project was sort of my piece of art, but I wouldn't want to pretend that, you know, the writers who put their work in is any of my art, you know. It's sort of they were just bringing something to the whole project, which was great. And the same with the community choir, and then Jason Wright, and, you know, the various people who contributed things. It just sort of, the video became hopefully is a vehicle for people to be able to say something about the river or feel something about the river or whatever, you know. And I didn't want that to be too grandiose, because that could kind of sound like I was, there was some media thing saying it was giving the community their voice about the river or something, which is a bit too big. It was like, well, you know, I don't have connections of all of the art community, and I wouldn't want to pretend that I, you know, had an exhaustive connection or understanding of it. But it was just sort of like, there's a few people that I put feelers out to try and, you know, connect with, and some people really liked it. Everybody actually really, really likes the river. And I think the film feels like the music that went with it, the film, the river just became more beautiful maybe than people think of it in their heads, which I think was a nice outcome, which I wasn't necessarily planning, but it seems to be that's the response that a lot of people had who came to any of the screenings. So that's been good.
Because that's, that was one of the things that I found so exciting about it was this, I mean, when I did art history, they used to run off all these definitions of what art was, and one of the definitions was it's in an art gallery, you know, that's how you know it's art, kind of sanctioned and weird. But like, what I loved was the way the context of the film, you know, the context of the film shifted the film in a way, you know what I mean? Because there were screenings outside, there were screenings in the water treatment centre, right? And then there were screenings, like you say, with community choir, with voice, with noise, with, you know, and I just think that was something so exciting. And how does it feel to hand over some of that control? I guess it would feel, I know when I work in that way, I really like it.
Yeah.
And I mean, I don't think people who don't like it would do it. But it is interesting, because some of your work does appear in an art gallery. You know, that's some of the settings for it, isn't it? You know, like it's a screen in a gallery, the bike helmet might be there, you know. And I just wonder, it just sounds like a great project.
Yeah, it's funny, because thinking about screening again, in particular the writers, because I felt, you know, they put a lot of work in, and it's really, well, it is really awesome. So, and we can just all do it again, because, you know, I've got a USB and I've got the script, so so that would be easy. But I just think, and a few people offer place, you know, sort of talk about places, if they talk about art galleries, I just go, I don't want to go in art gallery. Which is funny, it's not, it's more of a feeling in my gut about it than, you know, some philosophical position I have in my head about art or where it should be. I think so. I like that element of it being out. Obviously, it's a sort of super contextualizing, you know. So it's about the water. So we've got to go to where the water is, and, you know, and make it relevant. So put the actual art on the actual thing. That's great, because obviously an art gallery is not a water treatment. That also sort of in some ways connects back to that question of, because when I was at art school, mediums were questioned. You know, so if you were a painter, then you had to argue every single criticism, why are you using paint?
What
has it got to do with, if there's any content, what's it got to do with the content, you know? So, and when I first did the first video that I did at Arts, the one that I did for my last year, which was the burning the rugby posts with the thing, with my helmet guy on, that was directly obviously sort of talking about religiousness and sports and how we look at that and, you know, Springbok tours or whatever, you know. And so people watch rugby games on big screens at the pub, you know. So in that sense, it made, you know, made perfect sense. I'm trying to get around. So then I really enjoy video. Like if I go to art gallery, I'll go and look at the moving image thing straight away. I just like it. So that's a good enough reason. But then to have sort of more of a rationale behind it, sometimes I go, oh, why am I using video for this particular content? You know, does it make any sense? Which is where I do end up coming back to. And I suppose this might have a little bit to do with an art gallery context as well, is that people who don't necessarily go to an art gallery lots, well, they might find an art gallery intimidating. It's the same old thing people talk about all the time. But they don't find a video is something they see all the time. So one is they're able to read that, you know, that whole grammar thing. Like if it's a modernist, you know, geometric abstraction of a painting, then there's a lot of really great stuff behind it, but you have no freaking idea because you don't know that context. But a TV, a screen, people just know where he's born. Got it.
The river was sparkling and full. And for a moment, Michael was proud to be associated with it. He'd parked with the engine still running where they could have a view of good width and current. In many other places, of course, Te Awa Kairangi wasn't much more than a scrappy stream between mockingly wide banks. His father had been quiet throughout much of the drive. Taking the back route from Waikanae to Paraparaumu, they went past a line of trees that had been struck by lightning a couple of years before, and Derek had pointed, smiling, "Oh, I like those blokes." Michael explained about the lightning, and Derek clapped, "How wonderful." When the lightning had hit that area, it was on the news and they discussed it in some detail. It was tiring not to be able to draw on even these simple past exchanges. His father lapsed into silence. Michael told his father that they were only stopping for a minute to have a look, and then they'd drive on to meet Samantha and Matthew at the agreed spot near Avalon, where they could get out of the car and go for a walk. His father was staring straight ahead in the direction of the river, but Michael had the feeling he might just as easily be looking at something on the windscreen.
That idea of grammar, like, I was thinking, like, Jessie's Girl and the BNZ project and stuff like that, like, there is a lot of grammar that speaks sometimes about, you know, like, commercial spaces, and I was really astounded that even in, you know, the one that you're talking about with the rugby post, and even the motorbike helmet, it's weird to read that and then read you talking about it and think, yeah. Oh, actually, I was reading that correctly, you know, like,
yeah, right.
There's something really reassuring about the human condition, maybe. Oh, no, now I'm getting philosophical. But you know what I mean? Like, there's something really interesting about that. It's really wicked. One of the things I'm really interested in is the idea of story in relation to your work. So, I was just thinking about how in conventional film and movie there's this obsession with the three-act structure and the, you know, if you think about blockbuster movies and stuff like that, or TV also, you know, there's a lot of obsession around, you know, rising tension and all that sort of stuff. And I just wonder, like, and also I also have that thing where I was talking to someone last year and they were talking about how film and video, they happen in time. That's how they're made. You know, you sit and for a certain amount of time and watch it in a way that possibly a painting or a photograph doesn't operate. And although I suppose, anyway. But I was just wondering, do you think about narrative in your pieces? Like, how does narrative operate? Like, especially in those erasures that you did of John Key's State of the Nation address, like, how? Yeah, just talk about it. You're amazing. You're just something great. Stop fumbling.
It's a tricky question, actually, about narrative, having a story in it, because I've never made a film thinking like that. Because it's more... So I haven't thought this one through. But I think it's more presenting a moment or an emotion or something. I suppose I've also used sort of writing terms for this as well, is that the video is much more a poem than it is an essay. So even though essays now, having read some of Ashley Young's, I'm not sure what that is, but you know, in the sense of a more I don't want to get into that, but yeah, it is more of a poem than it is an essay, whatever those definitions are. And it's also kind of funny because I think I find it easy to use those closed ideas of what those structures are when it's in a different discipline to me. Yeah. Whereas, you know, I'm talking about what's a video, what's a film. I used to get really annoyed at art school, people talking about, so is this a sculpture or is this not a sculpture? And it's like, who gives a rat's ass? Yeah. Just, you know, relate to what it is. It's a whatever it is, you know. You don't need to have a some other, you know, frame around it. So, yeah. So it tends to be much more, I'm going to... And I'm usually really minimal in the edit. And so it's just capturing particular moments. So either I think, so like the Jesse's Girl, like the petrol stations at night time while it's raining with, you know, classic hits playing, is I'm just going to, here's petrol stations and here's some weather and here's some comforting music. You know, it's like that can... I think some of the possibilities and those connections are important to dwell on. So when you also mentioned something about, not in this, but prior with the, some of the questions about silence, the idea of just being contemplative, like saying, look, you might race around, but I think this here's something worth feeling about or looking at for a while. So I'm just going to make a video, you're going to look at, you know, or if you can choose to stay there or not, but you know, if you want to, I'll put on some, what's his name, who sang Angels? Robbie Williams, and the petrol station, so you can sit in the comfy chair and look at petrol stations and think about that in the connection with weather or whatever for 10 minutes. So I don't know if that sort of, in a roundabout way, answered the question. Like, it's, that's sort of, that's the framework for that particular way of doing films, because I ended up, when I was at art school, I ended up doing two. One was like putting on my outfit, you know, really specific bits of clothing at a really specific place, doing a really specific action. That was one thing. And then the other one is just in the camera pointing at something and going, I already think this is worth looking at. You know, and then and then putting some music or sound or something or nothing with it. So so they are for people to just sort of sit and have a moment with them.
Because that's what I found really interesting was this idea, like whenever I think of narrative structure, I just think of how do I know when it's finished and how do I know when it's complete. And some of the action, I'm going to call them action videos, but like some of them, like they're complete when the action's complete, you know, I think particularly of like with Weeping Waters, with the ball being kicked up and down and up and down, and I was thinking, gosh, that's the most pure form of cause and effect, you know, like, because we often talk about that in narrative, we're like, oh, someone does something and something happens, but you know, it was just this most beautiful, but that was a complete action, that was a complete action. Whereas a lot of the more contemplative ones, do you imagine them playing more in a loop, or do you think that, how do you know when they're finished? Like, do you think to yourself, I'm going to make a 10 minute video, or how does that work?
All right, maybe these two questions there.
Yeah,
these two questions there was, how do you know when it's finished is a different thing to, or are you saying, how do you know when you've finished the art piece?
Yeah.
Or, as opposed to, when is this video actually finished?
Yeah.
When is it start and finish?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I always think the start and finish thing is a tricky thing because, the actual physical video, when you walk into a gallery or wherever you see it, is tricky because most of the time you make it so that at any point a person can come in and get a reasonable idea of what's happening. So I've always worked with that as a sort of like a given structural thing that I don't have much of a control over. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
But technology-wise now, you can kind of get something that's going to be triggered when someone walks into the room, therefore they'll get it from the beginning to the end. Yeah. So you could do that if you want. It's just a matter of mucking around with that. So that's just sort of a given structure that I try to work with. Yeah. But when it comes to when do I know a piece of video is finished, I sort of had this thing, so you probably watched most of those on Circuit, eh?
Yeah.
So for Circuit, for me, has been great because Mark Williams is an absolute legend who runs it, and he's just so great at promoting things and is enthusiastic about it. So, but it also plays the role for me of like publishing something,
You
know, I've recorded this now, and now I've released it, you know. So therefore, it's going to be in that form, that's sort of, so that's helpful to get to a point and go, I feel, it's always intuitive, it's always like, oh yeah, my guts, I feel like this is communicating whatever it is that I think I'm communicating, so therefore I'm going to stop here and I'm going to publish it. And I think that I always try and work one with the same ones I think I did with the questions, is like fill my head with the information and then just not think about it and then sort of intuitively respond. So that, because I don't want to get too caught up in it being like a puzzle or a theory or a calculation. It needs to be more alive than that. And I'm not saying the calculation's not alive, but it's one of those things I know when I get to the end of it. And I also have, because I've done it for a little while now, I trust my intuition. So I do end up going, I end up researching a lot, and sometimes you research afterwards, and sometimes it feeds into it. Most of the time, it feeds into it, going, "Oh yeah, it's my intuition was right about that." You know, but I think one of the things of the video as well is that if I'm doing those action ones, I definitely practice it as well, but not probably once or twice, not a lot, but you know, just make sure all the things I do work. And that it works as well, because so you might have an idea of the feeling of what you want to communicate, and then you film it and do it, and you go, nah, it doesn't work at all. So, so that kind of happens.
You know that intuitive thing, how do you keep that, like, it kind of feels a little bit like sometimes, in yoga or stuff like that, you call it beginner's mind, you know, so that you're not saying, this is how I did it last time, and your body goes, oh yeah, this is how I did it. So that idea of emptying the mind sounds really important. It sounds like a really important part of the process, maybe.
Maybe it is.
Sorry.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I've really thought about it that much, or whether it's super accurate, because it's not like I empty my mind of it. Like, I spend a lot of time when I'm travelling, when I used to take the bus or ride on my bike, going, what does that piece of clothing mean when I'm wearing? Is it got any connection to anything? And, you know, so that's always going on.
But I guess it's just intuition. Like, I guess I'm also thinking about teaching, like, that trust in ourselves, that's a really hard thing to teach someone else, isn't it? To find that. Because intuition, I also read it kind of as really, really personal. I always feel like everybody's got a story that only they can tell, or they've got a piece of art that only they can make, and it's a really hard thing to teach that kind of confidence. I don't know. And definitely, like you were saying, you do it so much, and that's probably the most helpful thing, isn't it?
Yeah. I do think, I completely agree, and in the way you live your life, I try to live my life that way as well. And I have made work that that I look back on now, and sometimes I go, like I did this work, so the Uduweda one, which has got a great big long name, Smoke Rises Around the Silent Sea. So at one point, I did this action right with it, and I did digging up the hole and putting the tree in the hole, right?
Yeah.
And so it's just far too long and complicated, but basically I copied chain cotton painting. I got a clay pot made exactly like that and put a tree just like that. And so his painting was sort of talking about containment and breaking up of land and stuff, so I used to do this sort of simple, maybe cheesy, sort of like, oh, I'm going to put it back in the ground, you know, and go to, you know, to so to Uruwedan National Park and do it there. And actually, the actual site was on the old redoubt, so the old place where the, you know, where the government set up and they do things. But we only had one of the things I hadn't thought through is like when you dig the ground becomes disturbed. So if you do it again, you know, you can't do too many takes. So we had a second take because something didn't quite go right. And then there was a little bit of dirt left over when I put that in, so I just threw it off. And at the time, I thought, that was a little bit, wasn't very loving of that, careful with that dirt, you know. But restrictions, I couldn't do it again, so I just left it out. And when I showed it up in Whakatāne, this woman said, "So you're talking about caring about the land. You know, you had that piece of wet dirt and you threw it out." And I was going, "Oh, shit." Yeah. So it's like, yes. And so I had to say, you know, I had to wear that I did that. And then, this may be being a little bit wanky about it, but I also kind of thought, well, I'm a Pākehā, you know, and I'm talking about a bit of that stuff, so I'm going to be sort of clumsy with stuff. So I felt that it was okay to be in there and to try and be a little bit honest that, you know, I try to be as aware and as, you know, respond to justice as much as I can around those sort of issues, but I'm gonna cock it up who I am is going to come into it sometimes and do things that weren't quite as caring as I hoped.
And there's something nice about that as well, is sometimes if we do things wrong, it gives a chance for someone to say that's wrong, you know what I mean? And like, sometimes it's good not to know at all, maybe, you know what I mean? And sometimes it's really nice to mess up and for someone to say that's not okay, and to be the person that they're saying that's not okay about. I don't know, like, I kind of, the part of me, not that I go out of my way to try and do things wrong, but it's kind of nice to have that kind of conversation where there's space for someone to say, meh, not so cool, and you can go, okay, yep, I was wrong.
That's right.
That, I kind of, like, just going back to that idea of context and circuit versus the way that The Rising Gale was shown, and just that idea, I mean, that it never, you kind of just blew my mind a little bit there, where I realised that one piece of video can be shown in multiple contexts, which is probably the most basic thing. But it's just such an incredible thing to think that, you know, there's that idea of the published space and circuit, but there's also the idea that it could be picked up and taken somewhere else as well. And so when you're making it, I guess there's a really interesting arithmetic going. Well, you know, then do you think about audience, or do you think about space, or do you think about like where it might end up? Or
I always think about audience. I think definitely, but I always think about me as an audience.
Yeah, yeah.
Because when I did the work, the Bend Down the Rugby Post, which is obviously a Ku Klux Klan reference, for my crit, we had a curator who was at the Gubba Brewster who was from America, right? And she'd just come in the country, and then she just sort of had this really strong reaction to it, you know. And in the crit, she sort of brought that up. But I had to hold myself back from being annoyed, because it's like, we're not in America, you know. you damn Americans think it's like, we're not in America, so in the sense of, I felt like I was really aware of my experience of seeing Ku Klux Klan burnings on, you know, on the telly, which is different to being, you know, like, I'd think very carefully about showing that work in America, you know, because obviously it'd be really, really differently. So I do think carefully about the New Zealand audience, imagined audience, as much as you can control such a thing. And as far as context, like this project, I think I got so caught up in the whole thing of it, it's only at the end that I kind of went, "Wow, man, we actually got some really great sites to show that film in," and I've never had such a context to be able to get a film and stick it in a context that makes complete sense, you know, so that the buildings and the architecture and the smell and everything is, you know, is the real thing. So that's sort of really great. So if there is any opportunity, I think, with work to be able to put it into a more relevant context, then I definitely try to do that. And Circuit try to think at the bottom of everybody's, you know, if there's a work, they do have some documentation of where the films are shown. So, because there's loads of things you can do, you know, in terms of like where it is and then what it's shot onto. It doesn't have to be a white wall or a screen or whatever, you know. It can have lots of, what it's shown on can have a difference. And because when I had the one up in the Uruwera National Parks at the City Gallery, it had, so the action work was on one wall, but around the sides were the waterfalls, so I'd film the seven waterfalls and then so then played them backwards and then took the colour out, so the black and white, and we stuck them on a black wall.
Awesome.
And so the black was so rich, and it was sort of, and also we put them on the wall like you'd hang paintings, you know, seven in a row, or you know, 1500 centres, you know, all that sort of sort of buzz. So it was really, really nice. So that, I suppose that was speaking a bit, again, the risk of being wacky, to the context of the gallery, that, you know, and that, you know, Colin McCann had put his Uruwera National, you know, his Uruwera mural had been in that same space, you know, so, but, you know, the viewer wouldn't know that, the people coming into the gallery wouldn't know that, but it adds lots of nice sort of undercurrents or kind of connections back to it as well.
Because there is that weird thing, like, I always wonder that, I saw an Al Budd et al. It was a lot of work. It was a collection of a lot of work over the years up at Gilbert Brewster, and I remember finding out that in some of the books there was writing in all of the books, you know, but you never saw that because the books were shut. And I often think, I don't know, I think I'm talking about magic, I think I'm talking ridiculous things, but often when I do see something, it hits something emotionally, and then later when I read about it, I think, oh yeah, that felt, you know, somewhere subconsciously, or maybe the building holds some memory or something like that. Like, that does feel, it reminded me of something else, you know, and I didn't realise consciously what that was reminding me of. Because I just think, and that's what I just love so much about this kind of work, is that there's the layers. And I used to think that, oh, if you don't understand the layers, it doesn't work. But really, it does. Like, it just seems to hit in a different way or something. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, if it can happen in a bit of art, you know, you got to be pleased about that.
Yeah.
I used to do that. Like, I remember Peter Wilson, him and Jacqueline Fraser are the first people to go to Venice, with, you know, and Peter Wilson's work is just like, it had all these ridiculous levels on it, you know. And I was thinking, and actually when I was in my master's, I went to interview him and says, how the fuck do you get all this? How do you get that in there? You know, because it had, you know, it was relating to painting, it was relating to Dante's Inferno or something, you know, so philosophy, as well as like the sort of, they had lots of geometric abstracted shapes as well, which connected back to those early painters who had lots of, you know, ideas of philosophical ideas of being pure and design, you know, influencing our who we are and politics and all that, you know. So how do you get all that stuff, how do you control all that stuff, you know? I want to be able to do that. He didn't really have any answers for me. But I think it is part of it is the intuition. So, like, and I think it's that kind of thing. Like, it's like, man, you've got these ideas that you think I'd like to have in this work. So read all this stuff and get all of that info in there, and then get your whatever the medium is you have. Bring in some of those. Bring in those objects and that paint or whatever. Or for me, videos. And so bring in the clothing and the context and the architecture that, you know, has some connection to all of that, and then hope that some of those layers come out, you know, because I think it's completely right sometimes that I've had that same experience with artwork where you go in and it feels like it dislodges something in you about something, but you can't quite work it out what it is, but then later on you see it and you go, that's right, that vibe was in that work, how was that in that work, you know,
because I remember I always love that's quite, I used to love going with smaller kids as well, like, because kids seem to have some weird intuition. I remember seeing a Len Lai, you know, one of the sculptures moving, and there were lots of adults sort of standing around going, you know, oh yes. And this kid just came in and lost her nut. She was just laughing hysterically and saying, it's rude, it's rude. And I thought, oh my goodness, it is. Why are we and I really wonder about that idea of us being our audience as well. Like, I wonder, oh god, no, that's being narcissistic, but I do wonder about that thing that if it talks to intuition, maybe there's some broader, I don't know, it's pretty great. I'm just about finished, but I did just want to ask one more question, which you touched on before. I'm really interested in the idea of silence or noise in the films, like you know, when I went to film school, it was always, you know, like there was a lot of talk about it being a dual kind of, you know, right, silence as a soundtrack kind of thing. And yeah, I just wonder, can you talk a little bit about that in your work?
It's funny because we had this, so one of the screenings for the River project was at Gear Island Treatment Plant, so mm-hmm. we had this really big image on this on the wall of this treatment plant. Well, one of the buildings, I'm not exactly sure what that building was we were going to do it on the directly on the treatment plant, and then we went to meet up with them again because it took lots of, like, you know, all these reports and everything to be able to let us in, and you only allow 30 people in, and we had it on the side of the treatment plant. But when we got there 2 days before screening, it was like someone had put a new safety sign right on the place where we were going to screen. It's like, hey, kidding me? Because, yeah, it was funny. Because we did a double take and was going, that sign wasn't, that is that. So we had to totally just go and put it onto this big wall, which worked fine. But also, we had technical difficulties, so we didn't have time to check the sound, so the sound was really loud, which I kind of wanted it to be in some ways, because it was a sort of slightly industrial kind of vibe, so, you know, rumbling and concrete, and, you know, and the river was just over there, and there was all, you know, fencing around. It sort of made sense, but then it also became slightly overpowering, because I was actually fearful of the sound. Like, I was thinking, this is going to ruin my ears. and it was one of those, again, I should listen to my gut, and got up straight away and just said, oh, can we just turn it down a little bit? Because it's a 24-minute long film, so, you know, could have saved people a bit. But then Mark Amory, he was in the front row, and he's just loving it. So I'm not sure what to do there. But I think... So silence is, I suppose, has a contemplative, spiritual connotation for me, in that we often don't get lots of silence in our contemporary culture, and it's often, it's just on top of my head, but I find silence to be honest, and I'm honest with myself if I'm in enough silence, which sometimes, you know, it's not so great because these things come to you, but in the sense of finding some kind of way, I find silence is helpful. So I like to have that kind of give a little bit of sacred thing to the moment on occasion. So I think it was one of the other films where I just did, it's just silent, which is recessional, which is all the battle sites from the New Zealand walls. I just tried so many different sounds and no sound. Actually, no, it's not silent. It's actually got the actual sound of the place there. It's sort of a silent thing, a quieter sort of thing. But it's that again is just some, like, here are these really quiet objects, place. There's lots of other things going on. But I think it's... because of certain dignity and space and honesty, I suppose, is what silence.
Yeah.
I hope that silence does in the films.
Yeah.
And I think the other component, so the sound component for me, is often one of emotion, probably. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or some of them is humour, actually. Some of the soundtracks. So Pat Benatar and AC/DC are sort of, you know, humour. But it obviously sort of the context of being a teenager or whatever, but
I really enjoyed them in the way that like, you know, if you think about something like Seven, it's the axe on the wood and that's what gives the sound, whereas something like this with the service stations, you know, it's an imported sound. And I think that, I don't know, I think it just shows such great range in your work, and like that idea of silence as well is just so, it is really exciting to sit and quiet, and yeah, I just think they're wonderful.
Yeah.
I think you're really clever,
Mark. Thank you.
Hey, thanks so much.
No worries.
And have a really good afternoon.
Quintilian said that writing hinders memory, but this restless river writes in flowing currents and does not forget its history from bend to bend. She writes of banks broken and rough-sawn timber houses swept away. We travel up her throat, edged with native bush that spreads back densely packed from eastern to western hills. We will be born again out of her wide mouth. Some take flight here. Some drift away on this floodplain of treachery. Charles Hagen watched the water rise rapidly. He tried to secure his house with rope. When he went out, the water was up to the window and the house shook. Charles was swept half a mile downstream into a tree. Mrs. Hagen and the new baby were on the roof of the house as it was borne past him on the current, and were found the next day, the infant firmly locked in the dying grasp of its mother. None of us want to surrender to the power that bites at banks and scours river selvage.